KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
This is Democracy Now!, broadcasting from Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana.
Pronged attack on the rule of law, and that has real consequences for real people, including things like individuals being deported mistakenly or individuals being swept up in immigration raids who happen to actually be U.S. citizens. It's very, very concerning.
Law scholars and former Justice Department officials are warning the United States is facing a constitutional crisis as President Trump escalates his attack on the rule of law, from detaining hundreds of international students and threatening judges to using executive orders to target law firms and universities. We'll speak to David Cole, Georgetown law professor and former ACLU legal director. Then Trump requests a record $1 trillion budget for the Pentagon, while other agencies face major cuts or even elimination.
Spending $1 trillion on the Pentagon when you're decimating basic services is really obscene. You know, they want to build a Golden Dome defense system and new fighter plane that are unlikely to work as defense systems, but they're going to work to line the pockets of weapons contractors.
And we look at how President Trump is threatening Iran again ahead of this weekend's U.S.-Iran nuclear talks in Oman.
I think if the talks aren't successful with Iran, I think Iran is going to be in great danger. And I hate to say it, great danger, because they can't have a nuclear weapon.
All that and more coming up. The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana. Stock markets around the world are plummeting after President Trump's sweeping and unprecedented tariffs on imports to the United States took effect at midnight. They include across-the-board tariffs of 104% on Chinese goods, which prompted China to retaliate with levies of 84% on imports of U.S. goods. Hong Kong's benchmark Hang Seng Index fell by over 13%, its biggest one-day drop since 1997. Japan's Nikkei Index fell by nearly 8%. Markets in India and the Middle East also tumbled. On Tuesday evening, President Trump celebrated the chaos set off by his trade war, telling an audience at the National Republican Congressional Committee's annual gala that foreign leaders are lining up to make a deal.
I'm telling you, these countries are calling us up, kissing my ass. They are dying to make a deal. Please, please, sir, make a deal. I'll do anything, sir.
On Wall Street, Goldman Sachs has further raised the prospect of recession in the next year, now putting the odds at 45%. A CNBC survey found two-thirds of U.S. corporate executives believe Trump's trade war will trigger a recession. Israeli airstrikes on eastern Gaza City have killed at least 29 Palestinians, with 80 others missing and dozens more wounded. Scores of people are believed to be trapped in the rubble after the strikes leveled 10 residential buildings. At the United Nations, Secretary General Antonio Guterres on Tuesday reiterated his demands for Israel to end its total siege of Gaza, now in its sixth week.
More than an entire month has passed without a drop of aid into Gaza. No food, no fuel, no medicine, no commercial supplies. As aid has dried up, the floodgates of horror have reopened. Gaza is a killing field, and civilians are in an endless death loop.
An autopsy has revealed that a Palestinian teen who died in Israeli prison last month likely starved to death. 17-year-old Walid Khaled Abdullah Ahmed collapsed on March 22nd in Israel's notorious Megiddo prison, where he'd been held without trial for 6 months for allegedly throwing stones at Israeli soldiers. An Israeli doctor who observed the autopsy said Ahmed had suffered severe muscle and fat loss. He also had scabies and showed signs of torture. In New Jersey, the family of a 14-year-old Palestinian-American boy shot dead by Israeli forces is demanding an investigation into his killing. Family members say Omar Mohammed Rabea was shot 11 times in total during an Israeli raid Sunday near the town of Termasaya in the occupied West Bank. The World Food Program is calling on the Trump administration to reverse $1.3 billion in cuts to emergency food assistance for 14 nations facing famine. The WFP said in a statement, quote, if implemented, this could amount to a death sentence for millions of people facing extreme hunger and starvation, unquote. Secretary of State Marco Rubio had previously promised to preserve the funds. In immigration news, the Trump administration's revoked deportation relief for more than 900,000 immigrants who entered the United States through a parole process under President Biden. The Homeland Security Department has ordered immigrants who were given temporary protections under a Biden-era smartphone app known as CBP-1 to leave the United States before in the coming days or face arrest and deportation. In related news, the acting head of the Internal Revenue Service is resigning after the agency agreed to share personal tax data on undocumented immigrants with federal agents. Melanie Krause is at least the third top official to leave the IRS since Trump took office. Here in New York, Mayor Eric Adams is reopening an Immigration and Customs Enforcement office inside the Rikers Island jail complex. Adams first signaled the move after he met with Trump's so-called border czar, Tom Homan, in February. The New York Civil Liberties Union slammed Adams' administration for, quote, selling out New Yorkers for Trump's dangerous deportation regime, unquote. The group said in a statement, quote, ICE's presence on Rikers serves no legitimate purpose and opens the door to unlawful collusion between local law enforcement and federal immigration officials in violation of our city's well-established sanctuary protections. New Yorkers see this for what it is. Mayor Adams is skirting the city council, cozying up to Trump and putting immigrant New Yorkers in harm's way, the New York Civil Liberties Union said. A federal immigration judge is set to rule Friday on whether the Trump administration has grounds to deport Palestinian Columbia University student protest leader Mahmoud Khalil, or whether he should be freed. In a hearing in Louisiana Tuesday, Judge Jamie Comins gave Trump officials a little over 24 hours to present their evidence in the case. Only 10 journalists were allowed at Tuesday's hearing, while others said they were denied entry to watch it remotely. Khalil's wife, Dr. Noor Abdallah, published a letter Tuesday in which she wrote, quote, exactly a month ago, you were taken from me. This is the longest we've been apart since we got married. I miss you more and more every day, and as the days draw us closer to the arrival of our child, I'm haunted by the uncertainty that looms over me, she wrote. In related news, a federal judge in Vermont has denied a request for ICE to release Tufts University student Remesa Özturk on bail while her case is resolved in court. This came after a judge ruled her case could be moved from Boston to the state of Vermont. Özturk remains jailed at a privately run ICE detention center in Louisiana after being taken by masked, plainclothes federal agents from the streets of Somerville, Massachusetts, in late March. This comes as Trump's State Department has revoked the visas of nearly 300 international students nationwide. The students, including at the University of California, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Harvard, and other schools, now face deportation. Meanwhile, new videos emerged of the arrest of Barakhan Suri, a Georgetown University professor and postdoctoral scholar who last month was ambushed by masked federal agents outside his family's home in Roslyn, Virginia. After being repeatedly transferred across at least five ICE facilities, he's currently jailed at an ICE detention center in Texas. His legal team said for 2 weeks, Suri was placed in a cell without a bed and with a television blaring 21 hours a day and was denied food or water to break his Ramadan fast. His legal team also said Suri's son spent days crying uncontrollably after his father's arrest and has now stopped speaking. The Trump administration's freezing $790 million in federal funding to Northwestern University and more than $1 billion in funding to Cornell University. This is the latest attack on higher education as dozens of universities face investigations into allegations of anti-Semitism and claims of racial discrimination amidst Trump's efforts to gut diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. China's accused the Trump administration of blackmailing Panama with repeated threats of seizing the Panama Canal to diminish Chinese influence in the region. China's embassy in Panama said on social media relations between the two countries is a, quote, sovereign decision of Panama and something the U.S. doesn't have the right to interfere in, unquote. The remarks came after U.S. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth visited Panama Tuesday for a ribbon-cutting ceremony of a new U.S. finance dock at Vasco Nunez de Balboa Naval Base.
Together, we will take back the Panama Canal from China's influence.
Hegseth also met with Panamanian President José Raúl Moreno. Protesters took to the streets in Panama City in response, condemning Moreno as a traitor for meeting with Trump officials.
Both Trump, Rubio, and now Pete Hegseth have indicated that they are going to take the canal. And obviously, the Panamanian people cannot accept this. And that is why we, a handful of patriots, are on the street today rejecting the presence of the Secretary of War in Panama and repudiating Moreno, the traitor, who behind the people's back is giving away our sovereignty and our self-determination.
Russia's military launched drone attacks on the Ukrainian cities of Dnipro and Kharkiv overnight, injuring at least 17 people. Kharkiv's mayor said the attacks were aimed at terrorizing Ukraine's civilian population into submission.
This is our enemy's new tactic, to frighten the civilians. This is civilian infrastructure of the city. These are production enterprises. These are Kharkov's business people. Of course they are scared. Also, when people go to sleep in the night, when children go to sleep and they encounter such strong strikes, the goal is to frighten the people.
Ukrainian officials say they're sending negotiators to Washington, D.C. next week for talks on a mineral deal that would see the U.S. continuing sending weapons in exchange for U.S. access to Ukraine's valuable mineral resources. The Supreme Court will allow the Trump administration to fire 16,000 federal workers in the probationary period. Tuesday's ruling did not determine whether the administration unlawfully fired the workers, as their union, the American Federation of Government Employees, argued in a lawsuit. Instead, justices ruled 7-2 that the plaintiffs lacked legal standing to bring their case. The White House has shrugged off a spat between President Trump's trade advisor, Peter Navarro, and the world's richest man, Elon Musk. On Tuesday, Musk used his social media site X to hurl insults at Navarro, calling him a moron, Peter Retardo, and dumber than a sack of bricks. After Navarro defended Trump's sweeping tariffs and described Tesla as, quote, not a car manufacturer, but a car assembler, unquote. The Washington Post reports Musk has repeatedly tried and failed to pressure Trump to reverse the tariffs. On Tuesday, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt dismissed the feud.
Boys will be boys, and we will let their public sparring continue. And you guys should all be very grateful that we have the most transparent administration in history.
And a federal judge has ordered the White House to reverse a ban on Associated Press reporters in the Oval Office and Air Force One after the AP refused to adopt Trump's new name for the Gulf of Mexico. On Tuesday, U.S. District Judge Trevor McFadden, a first-term Trump appointee, issued a preliminary injunction after determining the White House likely violated the AP's First Amendment protections. We'll have more on that stories after headlines. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, are we in the midst of a constitutional crisis? We'll speak with constitutional law professor David Cole about international students, immigrants, law firms, and universities. Stay with us.
Southern trees bear strange fruit, blood on the leaves, and blood at the root, black bodies swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant south, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of
Strange Fruit, performed by Billie Holiday. It was written by Abel Meeropol, also known as Lewis Allen, as a protest poem against the lynching of African Americans after he said he was haunted by Lawrence Beitler's gruesome, iconic photograph of the 1930 lynching of two black teenagers, Thomas Shipp and Abram Smith, not far from here in Marion, Indiana. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman at Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana, where I gave the David Letterman lecture last night. We're broadcasting from the Unified Media Lab. Joining me from Chicago is Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and it's great to see you've cut the geographical distance between us for at least for a day. And welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, an immigration judge has announced she may rule as early as Friday on whether the Trump administration can keep detaining Mahmoud Khalil, who was seized by federal agents March 8th from Columbia Housing in New York. Mahmoud Khalil was a Columbia University student protest leader involved in Gaza solidarity encampments. The judge has ordered the Justice Department to hand over evidence by 5 p.m. today to justify Mahmoud's continued detention in Louisiana. He was a legal permanent resident of the United States with a green card, which has now been revoked. At least 300 other international students at more than 80 colleges and universities around the country have had their visas revoked in recent weeks. On Tuesday, The Guardian published a letter Mahmoud Khalil's wife, Dr. Noor Abdullah, who's about to give birth, wrote to her jailed husband. It said in part, quote, "We will not be silenced. We will persist with even greater resolve, and we will pass that strength on to our children and our children's children until Palestine is free," she wrote. The case of Mahmoud Khalil comes as many legal scholars say the country is facing a constitutional crisis on a number of fronts, from the Trump administration threats to ignore judicial decisions to the administration's targeting of law firms and universities to Trump's use of the 1798 Alien Enemies Act to expel Venezuelans without due process to a notorious supermax prison in El Salvador. President Trump has even floated the idea of sending U.S. citizens to jails in El Salvador. We're joined now by David Cole, professor at Georgetown University Law Center, former ACLU National Legal Director. His latest piece for the New York Review of Books is headlined Academic Freedom in Peril. Cole also has a piece in The New Yorker titled The Last Time Pro-Palestinian Activists Faced Deportation. And he has a separate piece in The Guardian headlined Trump's attacks on law firms are an attack on law itself. Before we go into all these issues, Professor Cole, can you start off by talking about this latest decision, a judge ruling that the White House has to reinstate, allow AP to report from the White House covering President Trump, even though it refuses to say Gulf of America, continuing to refer to it as the Gulf of Mexico? The significance of this, David.
Really significant decision from a Trump-appointed judge declaring that the Trump's policy of punishing reporters and media outlets that don't toe his line violates the First Amendment. You know, nothing is more sacred in this country than the right of people and the press to criticize the government, to disagree with the government. And yet the White House was saying, if you disagree with us, if you refuse to call the Gulf of Mexico a new name that Trump has made up, We're going to keep you out of the ability to report on matters in the Oval Office on Air Force One. And the judge has said you can't do that. You can't punish the media for its point of view.
And David, what about this? There was a federal appeals court has overturned another firing of the Trump administration of two top federal labor officials. The court ordered that they be restored. Trump had abruptly fired the Gwynne Wilcox of the National Labor Relations Board and Kathy Harris of the Merit Systems Protection Board. And these are judicial bodies that oversee federal workers, and they are supposed to be fired only for neglect or malfeasance.
Right. So this is, again, part of Trump's effort to try to neutralize any checks and balances on his unlawful actions. Here, by removing officers who have independence under our laws from the mere political will of the president. There are certain agencies that we want to have independence, the Federal Reserve, the NLRB, the Federal Trade Commission. We don't want them making political decisions. We want them making decisions that are in the best interests of the country. And so that's what Congress has said. The president nonetheless dismissed these officers. They challenged his dismissal as a clear violation of the statute, which says he can't dismiss them just because he doesn't like them. He has to identify some actual wrongdoing or malfeasance or neglect of duty that they have engaged in. And so the D.C. Circuit has upheld their challenge at this point. I'm sure the Trump administration will take it to the Supreme Court, and they'll have the final word.
And what about these attacks on law firms, on major U.S. law firms that have been involved in pro bono work? Lawyers are supposed to be officers of the court. Talk about the impact that this is having on the legal profession.
Yeah, so, you know, if you are, you know, engaged in an effort to violate legal restrictions right, left, and center, lawyers are a problem, because what lawyers do is sue you when you violate the law. And so what you see President Trump doing is attempting to disable the bar from challenging his actions, and in particular to disable what is often referred to as big law, the big law firms that have, you know, in some instances, thousands of attorneys, incredible resources, and often use those resources pro bono to challenge unlawful actions of the government. That's, you know, that's what, when they're acting at their best in the sort of the ideals of the legal profession, upholding the law. Trump has singled them out for doing exactly that, and has done it explicitly in the face on the face of executive orders targeted at these firms. He says, well, you represented immigrants in challenging border policies, or you represented transgender folks in challenging laws that discriminate against transgender people, or you hired Bob Mueller, the former FBI director, who I don't like. And on the basis of those actions, he has imposed really crippling restrictions on firms, such as your security clearances are revoked, so you can't do any confidential classified work involving the government, and you're not allowed to go into federal buildings, which means you can't go to federal court, you can't go to the Justice Department, you can't do your work. Three courageous firms, Perkins Coie, WilmerHale, and Jenner and Block, have stood up to this blatantly illegal attack, went to court, challenged it the day these orders were issued. Judges immediately enjoined these orders because they are illegal on their face. You cannot retaliate against lawyers because you don't like the lawsuits they've brought or the partners that they have hired. And so the firms have been successful, and I would predict that no judge up to the Supreme Court will uphold what the Trump administration is doing. Yet, four firms, Skadden Arps, Paul Weiss, Milbank, and Wilkie Farr have settled with the president, have essentially given in to his illegal demands, have agreed to change their management structure within and to his liking, and have agreed to donate hundreds of millions of dollars of pro bono assistance to support causes that Trump approves of. That is not, what the legal profession is supposed to be about. It is not supposed to be about trying to curry favor with the administration by agreeing to illegal demands from the boss to only do his bidding. And that's unfortunately what we see four law firms doing here. I think this is a threat to the legal profession, but it's more than that. It's a threat to the rule of law, because what Trump is trying to do is neutralize the opposition that comes from lawyers who only are successful in their opposition when you are violating the law. He wants to violate the law with impunity, and so he's trying to take the law firms out of the business of challenging his actions.
Professor David Cole, I wanted to ask you about the students who have been detained. Interestingly, here at Ball State, there are five students and alum who were arrested at the end of February protesting around Palestine issues and investment in Israel. But I am talking now about Mahmoud Khalil. I'm talking about Ramessa Ozturk. Talk about the detention of, the removing of visas of green cards, the abducting of these student leaders. In the case of Ramessa, she'd written an op-ed in her Tufts paper about Palestine issues. Can you talk about what's going on here?
You know, what's going on here is absolutely clear. The Trump administration is trying to suppress protests that it doesn't like. And we don't have to guess about it. Just as with the law firm orders, Trump has put it out there in the public, in this time in a tweet on Truth Social, saying, we're going to go after you for your illegal, quote, what he calls illegal protests. Well, protests are not illegal simply because they express a view that the president disfavors. Protests are protected precisely because they express views that the president or the government disfavors. That's the point of protest. And what the administration is doing is abusing immigration authority that was never designed for this purpose to target people who are doing nothing more than speaking out in favor of Palestinian rights, opposing and objecting to the massive killing of Palestinians in Gaza by Israel. These are First Amendment protected activities. I could go out on the street right now and protest what's going on in Israel, criticize Israel, and argue for the right of Palestinians to a homeland and the like. And the government has no constitutional authority to go after me for that. Well, the same is true for non-citizens who live among us, the millions and millions of non-citizens who live among us. The First Amendment does not draw distinctions between citizens and non-citizens. It protects speech across the board. The Supreme Court has said because it protects speech across the board, it protects even the speech of inanimate entities like corporations. Well, if it protects corporations because we have an interest in the speech of all, it certainly protects the rights of non-citizens. And indeed, in a case I argued about 40 years ago, court struck down a provision of the McCarran-Walter Act, the then existing immigration law, that made immigrants deportable for advocating communism. And the court said the First Amendment protects all people within the United States. You can't punish a citizen for advocating communism. You can't deport a foreign national for advocating communism. And the same is true today. You can't punish a citizen for protesting what Israel is doing in Gaza. You can't deport a foreign national for protesting what Israel is doing in Gaza. And yet that is exactly what the Trump administration is trying to do. And it's employing a little used provision of the Immigration Act, which was designed to essentially give the Secretary of State the ability to remove or keep out high-level people, officials, whose entry would in some way undermine our foreign policy by sending the wrong message. We approve of this group by allowing its leader into the country. That policy, which gives the Secretary of State the ability to remove people whose presence or activities here poses serious foreign policy consequences, has very rarely been used, and only for high officials. And now the Trump administration is using it for ordinary students on college campuses who are doing nothing more than engaging in protests. The idea that a protest on a college campus poses serious adverse foreign policy consequences for the United States is ludicrous. We are stronger than that. We can tolerate the fact that people among us disagree about Israel and Gaza. In fact, we must tolerate that under the First Amendment, but the administration is not tolerating that with respect to foreign nationals, seeking to chill protest, and I think succeeding thus far, because everyone is deathly afraid that they're gonna get picked up if they do no more than, you know, advocate for the human rights of people in Gaza. It's a travesty.
And David, I wanted to ask you also about the assault on universities by the federal government, the withdrawal of funds, the pressure by some conservative members of Congress to remove university presidents, and even the federal government, for instance, in the case of Columbia University, demanding that the university remove the head of a department of Middle Eastern studies. Regardless of whether this is legal or not, the impact that this is having on the functioning of these universities and the fear that it's instilling across the country to university administrations.
Yeah, no, this is all part of the scheme, right? I mean, again, what is Trump doing? He's targeting the most vulnerable. He's targeting immigrants. He's targeting dissidents. He's targeting transgender folks. He's targeting people of color, but he's also seeking to neutralize any place where there might be opposition, the checks and balances. So removing heads of agencies, removing inspectors general, targeting the press and punishing them if they disagree, targeting law firms and punishing them if they disagree, and now also targeting universities and punishing them in totally unlawful ways. So universities under our Constitution are protected by the First Amendment. They have heightened what the court has called a special concern of the First Amendment is academic freedom, precisely because universities need to be places of free exchange, free inquiry. The court has said the First Amendment precludes political officials from interfering in the management of their academic affairs, in what they teach, who teaches it, what rules they apply vis-a-vis their students' speech and their professor's speech and the like. It's the university's freedom to make those decisions. Trump doesn't like how they've made those decisions. Again, principally on the issue of Israel, but I think that's being used basically as an excuse. What he's really trying to do is hem in any check or any criticism or any opposition from universities across this country by holding over their heads the millions and in some instances billions of dollars of federal funding that supports research that these universities carry out for us, you know, life-saving research. And he's doing it by asserting that the universities have in one way or another violated Title VI, which requires that recipients of federal funding not discriminate on the basis of race or national identity in their programs. And he claims, well, you know, they're tolerating anti-Semitism, therefore they're violating Title VI, therefore I'm going to punish them. Well, that's not how the law works. The law says that if you If the federal government wants to withhold funds because it claims that a university has violated Title VI, it has to specify the specific violation. It has to provide notice of that specific violation, a specific incident in which, you know, there was anti-Semitism and the school failed to respond adequately. It then has to give the university an opportunity to respond. It then has to engage in a program by program evaluation and can only withdraw funds to the extent that they are related to the particular program that constituted the violation. Has the Trump administration done any of that? No, it has not identified a single instance of anti-Semitism by students at Columbia, at Cornell, at Northwestern, at Princeton, at any of these schools where it has frozen funds. It has not identified a single instance of anti-Semitism that the schools failed to respond to adequately. Instead, it just waves its arms and says, anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism, without identifying a specific instance. And that is really problematic, because the line between free speech and anti-Semitic harassment is a difficult one to draw. If somebody gets up on campus and says, you know, from the river to the sea, that's their First Amendment right. If two people do it, that's their First Amendment right. If three people do it, that's their First Amendment right. I could go out on the street corner right now and say, from the river to the sea, and the government could not punish me for it because it's my First Amendment right. If enough students are saying that, and directing it at Jewish students so that Jewish students feel they don't have equal access to the educational environment, well, then a Title VI problem may arise and the school may need to respond in a particular way. But drawing that line is very difficult. Very few courts have found that this kind of speech constitutes, even conceivably, constitutes a Title VI violation. And so you need to have facts and circumstances to see whether the schools were simply allowing students to speak freely, which is their right, or failing to respond to actual discrimination, which they, are required to do. The Trump administration has just blown past that and instead is threatening to withhold billions of dollars from these universities if they don't do the Trump administration's bidding. And then, as you indicate, the Trump administration's bidding includes things like, oh, I don't like the head of this department, replace him. Or a report suggests, I don't like the Columbia University president, so replace her. And Columbia did replace her. Well, the president of the United States should not be deciding who is the head of a private university's academic department or of the university itself. Those are First Amendment academic freedom decisions of universities. But what Trump is seeking to do here is to neutralize the opposition. This is what autocrats do in many other countries. When they come to power, they look for where the opposition might come. The press, the lawyers, the universities, the nonprofit sector, that will be next. And they seek to neutralize opposition. That's Trump's plan here, and it's clear as day.
You're at Georgetown, David Cole. We want to ask you about the new video that's emerged on the arrest of Badr Khansouri, the Georgetown University prof and postdoctoral scholar who last month was ambushed by masked federal agents outside his family's home in Rosslyn, Virginia, after repeatedly being transferred across five ICE facilities, currently jailed at an ICE detention center in Texas. His legal team saying that for 2 weeks he was placed in a cell without a bed, a television blaring 21 hours a day, was denied food or water to break his Ramadan fast. So I wanted to ask you about him, about Rumeysa Ozturk in Tufts, about Mahmoud Khalil, all of these takings of these students, these scholars, these professors, and with Badr Khansouri at your university.
Yeah, so Professor Badr Khansouri was teaching in the Center for Christian Muslim Understanding. The Center for Christian Muslim Understanding, that's where he was teaching. He was teaching a class that violates no law whatsoever. And yet he comes out of class, goes home to his wife and child, and outside of his home is picked up by masked federal agents and, as you suggest, spirited off across many states and many detention centers. And what's the charge against him? As far as we can tell, the charge is his presence here threatens serious foreign policy consequences. Why? Because he has said some things on social media that support the rights of Palestinians against the Israeli attack on Gaza, and because he is married to the daughter of somebody who used to be in Hamas. Married to the daughter, a U.S. citizen daughter, of somebody who used to be in Hamas. This is guilt by association. No charge that he engaged in any criminal conduct, no charge that he advocated any kind of illegal conduct, no charge that he provided support to terrorist activity, simply that he said some things we don't like, and he's married to someone who is in turn related to someone who used to be in Hamas. That is, again, an outrageous action by the government, because you have a right to say things about the way people in Gaza are being treated. You say so every day on this show, and you can't be punished for doing so under our First Amendment, so Professor Khansouri cannot be punished for doing so. And you have a right to marry who you want, regardless of who their parent is. That is not a basis for kicking you out of this country. And yet he's been torn from his child, torn from his wife, simply for what he stands for in terms of his political views. And the same thing with the woman at Tufts. As far as we can tell, her only offense, if you want to call it an offense, is having written an op-ed in the Tufts school newspaper criticizing the Tufts administration for not being hard enough in its stance against atrocities in Gaza. Again, we all have a First Amendment right to criticize atrocities in Gaza and criticize others who are not criticizing those atrocities as they deserve to be criticized. That is our First Amendment protection. And yet she was, like Mr. Khansouri, picked up by masked agents and spirited away simply for what she said. And the same thing with Mahmoud Khalil, the graduate student, a green card holder at Columbia. What is his offense? Didn't engage in any criminal activity. He didn't support some terrorist activity. He simply spoke out during the protests about the horrific human rights abuses. Yeah. So these are core First Amendment activities, and foreign nationals should not be targeted for those activities. Universities should not be targeted for those activities. We should celebrate that we're a strong enough country that we can have dissent protected by the First Amendment and not punished by the Trump administration.
David Cole, I want to thank you so much for being with us. He is the Honorable George J. Mitchell Professor in Law and Public Policy at the Georgetown University Law Center, former National Legal Director of the ACLU. We'll link to your articles. And as we broadcast from Ball State in Muncie, there are students that are standing outside the studio holding signs that say, Ball State arrested five peaceful protesters, and know the Ball State five arrested for speaking out. The hearing for the Ball State Five will take place in court on April 23rd. They were charged with disorderly conduct as they took on a Board of Trustees meeting, and they were charged with disorderly conduct. And just to get this accurate, according to the statement that was given by the university to the Ball State Daily News, one was charged with disorderly conduct with unreasonable noise. Coming up, Trump requests a $1 trillion budget for the Pentagon, while other agencies face major cuts or even elimination. Back in 20 seconds.
It's been a long time since we laughed until we cried. It's been a short time entirety of life. I want to know what exists between the veil. Make some sounds that no one wants to hear. Humanity, what have we done to this? Is there nothing left?
Gloom Absolutely. Designs by Florist. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in Muncie, Indiana at Ball State, and Juan Gonzalez is in Chicago. While many federal agencies are facing crippling cuts and being forced to cut essential services, President Trump has announced he would seek a $1 trillion budget for the Pentagon. He made the comment while speaking to reporters alongside Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
We also essentially approved a budget, which is in the facility, you'll like to hear this, of $1 trillion, and nobody's seen anything like it. We have to build our military, and we're very cost conscious, but the military is something that we have to build.
We're joined now by William Hartung, senior research fellow at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. His new piece for Forbes is headlined, Does America Really Need a $1 Trillion Pentagon Budget? He's also co-author of the forthcoming book, The Trillion Dollar War Machine, which will be out later this year. So, Bill Hartung, answer your own question. Does the Pentagon really need a $1 trillion budget? Talk about what's going on here as DOGE, as the Trump administration, slices and dices and removes and eliminates other agencies.
Do we need a trillion is kind of a softball question because the answer is absolutely no. We're already spending too much. And this really gives the lie to the idea that it's about efficiency. They've almost eliminated the Agency for National Development, Department of Education, cutting the Centers for Disease Control, going after Medicaid, cutting staff at the Social Security Administration. If they're about efficiency, first of all, they couldn't do it overnight. They'd have to study what works and what doesn't. So basically, they're decimating our civilian government, which provides needed services here and abroad. And they're rewarding Pentagon contractors, including Elon Musk, who's got unprecedented power. You know, the Silicon Valley militarists don't even need to lobby this administration because they're embedded within it. J.D. Vance was groomed by Peter Thiel, the Silicon Valley military person. You've got Musk. You've got people spread throughout these different agencies. There was some hope because of Trump's rhetoric. He said, well, if we can, you know, warm up to China and Russia, we could cut military budget in half. You know, nuclear weapons cost too much. I was pretty sure that was just a kind of a bone to those in his base, some of whom are sick of endless wars, don't trust these corporations. But I didn't expect him to really go along with it. And indeed, he has. And he's talking about building a golden dome, which is sort of akin to Reagan's impenetrable Star Wars missile shield, which almost all scientists say is not possible to do. So that's a big boondoggle for both the old companies like Lockheed Martin and the new companies like Anduril and Palantir. And then, of course, this new fighter plane, which he decided to call the F-47 because he's the 47th president. I mean, might as well put his name on the side. There's no indication this is going to work. Andrew Coburn, a longstanding analyst, has written a piece about this. So at the same time, they're saying, you know, they're going to preserve every penny, spend it wisely. They're putting money at these new boondoggles. Of course, they've never passed an audit. They paid dramatically more than they should for spare parts. They've gotten rid of independent inspectors general who could follow where there's corruption going on. So this is really an effort to militarize our society. What Eisenhower warned about, that we didn't want America to become a garrison state. And getting rid of AID, you know, America's face to the world now is going to be almost entirely military. You know, AID had its problems, but also provided clean water, food, HIV prevention services that help millions of people around the world. So I think this really is bad for America's influence in the world. It's bad for large numbers of people. Almost the only beneficiaries are going to be the weapons contractors. And of course, this is going to be the highest Pentagon budget since World War II, so higher than peak of Korean Vietnam, higher than the peak of the Afghan and Iraq wars, and it's completely unnecessary, and it's actually going to make us less safe.
And Bill, you've written other articles questioning even whether the official Defense Department budget is actually much larger, possibly twice as large, the military budget of the United States. Could you talk about this discrepancy between the official budget and the actual expenditures of the U.S.?
Yes. Well, it's not just the Pentagon budget that has a military purpose or is the result of militarized foreign policy. You know, nuclear warheads are done in the Department of Energy. Some of our military aid is in the International Affairs budget instead of the Pentagon budget. Of course, the Veterans Administration has mushroomed to take care of the Iraq and Afghan vets, of whom hundreds of thousands have physical wounds, PTSD, and so forth. And then, you know, part of our interest on the debt is attributable to our huge military expenditures, and that interest is soon going to be higher than almost any other government agency. So whether you're concerned about fiscal responsibility or basic services, this is just not the way to go. And the rationale for it is this kind of cover the globe strategy that we need 750 military bases, 11 aircraft carriers, essentially floating air bases, more nuclear weapons. We need a different strategy. You know, this idea of getting tough and peace through strength has been a disaster in this century. If you look at the outcomes of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, which were supposed to be won through superior technology, but then because the opposition knew the local terrain, local culture, come up with cheap countermeasures like improvised explosives devices, all the technology in the world was not going to win those wars. So the idea that we're going to take the same approach against a large, powerful country like China could be a recipe for disaster. And the lead kind of arguments in that front are coming from Silicon Valley militarists like Peter Thiel, Palmer Luckey, and so forth.
Bill, I wanted to ask you about that particularly. You recently wrote for a monthly review, a review of a book by Alex Karp, the CEO of Palantir, and you say in there about these Silicon Valley militarists, you say all of them are convinced that at some future moment, by supplanting the old school corporate weapon makers like Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, they will usher in a golden age of American global primacy grounded in ever better technology. You talk about this rise of the Silicon Valley militarists.
Sure. I originally wrote that for Tom Dispatch, which allows people to write this kind of thing, which is not easy to do anymore. But Karp has a book, and it's essentially kind of like, you know, 19th century ideology with 21st century technology. He says America's lost its way. We don't believe in the concept of the West. We're not patriotic, and we need a unifying national mission. His idea of that mission is a new Manhattan Project to militarize artificial intelligence. To me, that's a pretty impoverished view of what our mission should be as a nation. You know, our mission is supposed to be tolerance, democracy, prosperity, diversity, all the things that are under attack at the moment. So this is completely backwards. And the thing is, you know, Palantir, for example, was one of the few companies to actually cheerlead the war in Gaza. Some of their technology was used for targeting. Karp decided to actually have their board meeting in Israel during the Gaza war. And they also are, you know, once we master AI, we'll be able to beat China in a war and so forth. So they're a different breed. You know, the head of Lockheed Martin, he'll fund think tanks that make, you know, sympathetic case, but he's not, with a bullhorn saying, let's dominate the world, because he feels like that's a bad look for somebody who's, you know, profiting from this. Whereas these Silicon Valley folks are shameless. They really think that they're our saviors, that they can do things better than the government. And they've got some wild ideas, like Peter Thiel is researching how to live forever, and Elon Musk wants mass colonization of space, and Palmer Luckey is basically a gamer who decided to make weapons. These are not the people you want shaping your foreign policy. I mean, if they had a product that was worth, well, for defense, buy the product. They should be vendors. They shouldn't be trying to shape our policy, our worldview, our government, and they shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Bill Hartung, if you can talk more about Elon Musk and his conflicts of interest, as he goes after these other agencies, it's not just that they're increasing, and Hegseth has announced this $1 trillion Pentagon budget. It's that Elon Musk has multi-million dollar contracts with the Pentagon. If you could discuss that, and then also the Pentagon repeatedly citing China as its principal adversary. Now there's a trade war looming. How do you see this playing out?
Well, Musk has more power than the entire cabinet combined. He's almost co-president, and he owns a country, SpaceX, that is going to make a version of Starlink for the military, launches a lot of our military satellites, has a new product called the Starship that supposedly will be able to put more payload in space than any other weapon. And the Pentagon looks to this as a way to, you know, beat China in the space race. So his Pentagon contracts are only going to grow, and he may well try to shift money towards his Silicon Valley allies. He's trashed the F-35, which is reasonable, but he said, let's replace it with unpiloted, you know, drones. So it's kind of an unprecedented situation to kind of anoint, you know, an unelected billionaire to have this kind of power, and especially since the Pentagon, he has a very obvious conflict of interest. I've never seen anything like this. I mean, these folks were vetting people during the transition of who could work at the Pentagon, and of course Musk, they sort of made this sound like this was advisory, but they're actually basically dismantling government, you know, laying off scientists and experts who we need for things like fighting pandemics. He's a walking conflict of interest.
Just to be really clear, I want to correct myself. I said millions of dollars. U.S. Space Force announced Friday it would award SpaceX contracts. SpaceX is Elon Musk's company, privately held company. It would award SpaceX contracts worth approximately $5.9 billion, $6 billion.
Yes. And it'll only grow in the future. In fact, Bloomberg has said this is kind of the weapons contractor of the years to come. Whether they can, you know, outplay Lockheed Martin that gets $40 or $50 billion a year is yet to be seen. But there's going to be a battle. You know, Silicon Valley is embedded in the executive branch. Lockheed Martin has huge influence in Congress because they put facilities in most of the states. They hire former government officials to lobby for them. They fund think tanks. They serve on government commissions that make policy. So this is either a clash of the titans, or, as often happens, they'll just push the budget high enough to fund both of them.
We just have 30 seconds. If you could respond on China.
Yes. Well, China is the gift that keeps on giving. Exaggerating the threat from China is a way to fund these companies. I mean, it's basically Washington say China, you know, that's another $1 billion for a weapons contract. In fact, we should have an accommodation with China, not be preparing for a war with China.
We're going to leave it there, and I want to thank you so much for joining us, Bill Hartung, Senior Research Fellow at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. We'll link to your piece at Forbes, Does America Really Need a $1 Trillion Pentagon Budget? Special thanks to our local production crew here at Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana. I want to thank Elvin Cesario, Ben Caldwell, and Tegan Chandler. And special thanks to Corey Olenkamp, to Dean Kristen McAuliffe, and to Kim McClure, as well as Dennis Moynihan. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Wernoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Malkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Masood, Anjali Kamat.
Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Sandpoint and King Cove. GCI offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and pricing as in Anchorage. More information is available at gci.com/internet.